finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, let's start with some April for club chaos, Conan. It's the only place that we can start. Why not? We're in April.
Started there yet.
Chaos is going on all around us, so why don't we just start with it? And this time it is Nick Fitzgerald, the Meath hurling manager's turn to give out about this April for club. Colm O'Rourke has given out about it in The Independent again for the second week in a row. And again, you'd agree with everything in that. But he's saying, see, there's two ways of looking at this. Do you do what you're supposed to do and work at a disadvantage, or do you break the rules and completely mess up the April for club? So, like, I mean, because
no rules to break there, by the way.
There's actually no rules to break. So Nick Fitzgerald is saying that he hasn't seen any of his players, or he's seen them collectively once in the last 20 days. Now, they are out in the Joe McDonagh Cup on the 5th of May, and now we're at the 23rd of April, and he's seen them once. So, like, I mean, he's following what should be done, letting them back to their clubs. And another, like, this is another issue, is that the hurlers, his hurlers, are playing football championship in Meath. And we talked about the Offaly hurlers refusing to play football in Offaly. I'm kind of speculating that that's on the instructions of the Offaly hurling management. But when you talk, when you listen to Nick Fitzgerald, he's talking about them going back playing football and losing their sharpness for hurling. And you know, like, I mean, everybody knows with hurling, you have to really keep your eye in and you have to keep it going. You, being our hurling reporter, would obviously know this.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But, like, I mean, it's definitely a disadvantage for him to be letting his players off playing club football when he needs to keep them sharp for May the 5th.
Yeah, and like, yeah, the hurling thing is obviously the biggest one, but just as a team doing the proper training, the risk of boys getting injured, there's so many elements why you wouldn't, like, tactical analysis, like, you know, all this stuff that you have to work on before a big game. Well, like, it's not up to Nick Fitzgerald shouldn't be concerned about this April thing. It's not up to him to do it. He should be worried about himself, because if Meath have a bad championship and they go out early, no one's going to say, well, you know, he was good for the April for club.
Oh, no, his head's on the block. Head's on the block. And he says, look, and people will say, Asher, he's not fit, he's not sharp. And, like, it's almost like that's the player's fault, whereas he's been off playing football with his club or training with his club. And, like, him, I mean, this is what Nick Fitzgerald says. He says, there's a lack of time and a lack of preparation. You build up momentum in the National League trying to get to a final, then you go into April and you lose your players. You lose momentum and intensity. Players go back to their clubs, and with the greatest respect, it can't be the same. And, like, that's the reality. Training with your club is nowhere near as high, because we all know there's a step up from club to intercounty. That's obvious. This isn't just like my four leagues and four step ups. Everybody knows there's a step up from the club to the county. So you're not training at the same level or with the same sports science as you would be. So if managers say, good luck for 30 days, they're at a disadvantage. They're not doing that, as we all know. And then the April thing is a little bit of a farce.
Yeah, there are a lot of, well, it's basically if the club or the county team is going wrong, that a lot of club teams are training harder than county. Like, I've spoken to a few county players down through the years who said they actually got bigger workout playing with their club. So there is that sort of side of it as well. But I agree, like,
depending who the managers are, maybe, you could have a cowboy at intercounty, but you also could have an awful cowboy with your club, which there's more of a chance of you having a cowboy with your club than with the county.
That's true. But we spoke a couple of weeks ago about the, you know, the level of analysis that Jim Gavin goes into, and he knows how much people have done during the week with their colleges at the time, and, you know, whatever else, what games they've played with their clubs, and he's able to monitor that, so everyone is on the same page. Like, you're not getting that with your club team. Like, and Nick Fitzgerald can't do that when everyone's just pissed off for a whole month.
Yeah, that's the thing. And John McGrath, interestingly, he's, after injuring his hamstring playing football, like, these hurling managers must be going off their heads, and vice versa with football intercounty managers, because there's one thing losing them to your own code, but to be losing them to football, and not only the sharpness but then the injury. And so he limped off with 10 minutes to go. We don't know how serious it is, but it's enough for him to be concerned enough playing with Loughmore Castellini against Drummond Inch in football. And like, I mean, I'd say Michael Ryan is just losing the plot.
Yeah, but it's good that we're showing these two examples this week, because we've come down hard on the other side of it when players aren't being released to play for their clubs, and it's shit for club players, especially when they're waiting to play fixtures. But now we have actual examples on the other side of it, player getting injured, a manager not being able to prepare properly. So it is a disaster for every party involved.
Yeah, yeah. There's no real positivity about it. Right, this is a more lighthearted one. And it's about Aidan O'Shea. And I read this on a website that usually takes stories from other publications. And I couldn't find where the original story comes from. So this is from the Hogan Stand. I presume they took it from a local paper. But there's no credit on it as usual. So this is Aidan O'Shea. So this all seems completely innocent and, you know, worthy cause for fundraising for your club. So Aidan O'Shea is going to do the full Monty. So he's going to, it's a part of a fundraiser for his club Briefy. So he's among 700 or 70 other locals currently rehearsing for their movies, which will be shot over the next 2 weeks. So this is thing, which is the full Monty is one of 7 well-known films which are going to be shown on the night. So a little bit of acting, a little bit of crack. It's to raise money for your local club. All sounds good to me so far, Conan. Can't see any negatives about this at all, until we read on a little bit and realise when it is. So it's on the Friday night, 2 days before they play Galway in the Connacht Championship. And I'm just thinking, Aidan. It just maybe proves Aidan does not give a shit about these fellas, because we know the knives are out for Aidan all the time, yeah. Right? So Aidan, like, there'll be a certain newspaper, national newspaper, could have an undercover photographer taking pictures of Aidan doing the full Monty 2 days before the Galway game. I don't know. If I was Aidan, I might give that night a pass before, because, like, I mean, like Aidan O'Shea is at the level now of, I think, kind of a mob coming after him, that he can have an absolutely brilliant All-Ireland final, clean James McCarthy out of it in the first half, play really well for 60 minutes, really tire in the last 10 minutes, and get lambasted for not playing well in the 10 minutes at the end of the game. Like, I mean, if I was at that level of scrutiny where you have a brilliant All-Ireland final and people tell you didn't based on 10 minutes, I might give the full Monty thing a swerve 2 nights before. I almost admire his mental strength for going through this.
But he's also at a stage where, as you said, like, he's had a really good season last year. He didn't do anything untoward, but still he was being lambasted. Like, you know, you had Bernard Flynn pulling out some story from a friendly game that, you know, Aidan O'Shea getting a picture taken with kids he wanted, you know. So
yeah,
he didn't do anything last year, but he still had all those stories anyway. Yeah. So maybe he's thinking, you know what, like, it's going to come after me no matter what. I'll just have a bit of crack and raise money for my club.
Yeah, and he is raising money for his club, and I mean, that's what the whole night is about. I'm just predicting what could come.
Oh,
and
it's definitely going to, like, Brawley didn't write this week, so he's definitely going to have a call now next week.
I'd say him and Bernard Flynn and these fellas, a lot of columnists from another national newspaper will be salivating at the thoughts of this. And of course they'll say nothing until the outcome of the result, you know.
Nothing
will be said until the hindsight. This is why he's the scapegoat for this. Hopefully he won't be the scapegoat for that, but, like, I mean, I don't know. I might have swerved it.
We won't hear this story until August or September. Like, maybe we're going to win Connacht, they're going to go through the Super 8s, they get to the semi-final, they'll probably draw a game, then Aidan O'Shea will be
there'll be a fallout from the Galway game. Usually for Mayo there's a big fallout after the Galway game, and then people kind of say nothing, or it's in a bit of disarray, and then all of a sudden they turn it around and they're just shut up.
Stephen Roger hasn't a clue. We still have that to come as well.
Yeah,
that's one of the stories. But Aidan O'Shea is going to get it no matter what. So he is going to get it.
So he might as well get it. He doesn't care, basically, which I'm kind of happy about. Right, Zach Toohey. Give a shout out to Zach Toohey, who has played his 150th AFL game. An unbelievable achievement, really. He's played 120 games in a row. So Jim Steins racked up 264, which is way out on its own. That's just beyond belief. But, like, I mean, for Zach to go over there and, you know, play that amount of games, they reckon 90 is the average, even for Australian players. So for Zach to be close to doubling that and go 120 in such a physical game, big huge men, big hits, to go 120 without a break is unreal.
I heard Satanto Halpine recently say it's like the lifespan's 4 years for an AFL player, like, if you're doing well. Like, 120 games in a row is just ridiculous. Would he be classed as a legend now? Like, that's sort of legend standard, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no doubt he's a Portlaoise legend.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that he's a legend, not for his performances on the field in Laois, but for being from Laois and doing what he's doing out there. And there's no doubt he would have been a Laois legend had he stayed, because there's no real kind of faults to his game at all. He was, like, Daniel Flynn's coming up on the show in a while. Zach would be a little bit like Daniel Flynn, just a real explosive explosive player, just kind of real natural at the game, a natural athlete, speed and all that kind of thing.
Racehorses.
But it's interesting that Pierce Hanley needs 8 more appearances to join the 150 club. So he's on 142. Pierce went out in 2008. Zach went out in 2011. Or Pierce made his debut in 2008. Zach made his debut in 2011. So Zach has gone ahead of Pierce with Pierce having a 3-year head start on him. Like, isn't it unreal? It just goes to show when you can stay injury free, how different your career can turn. Like, injuries are just, they destroy careers. Like, yeah. I mean, it's unreal how stop start, and it's not just the injury, it's getting back from the injury, it's the mental kind of side of things, how you deal with the injury, whether you could go off the rails when you're injured, being you know, pissed off. It's the isolation of when you're injured. Fellas like Zach have never had to go through that. Like, I mean, it must be an unbelievable kind of thing to not have to go through that.
An injury at that level can destroy your life, basically. I mean, it's your professional career that's on the line if you get injured. No contract. And Marty Clark, who came back, you know, with injury, and that's it. He's over. He's not playing professional football, as they would call it, anymore. So, yeah, like, it's all the more important to do it there, but that adds pressure to it as well. But someone like Zach, was he ever injured with Port Leash?
I don't remember him being very injured. I don't remember him ever being injured. He's just such a natural athlete that I don't think he was. An interesting one from Zach was that when he was a young fella in Port Leash, he called his dog Wooly after me, because he used to look up to me when he was younger. It's the first time I've ever said that.
Is that true, though?
What is true?
Let's get Zach on to see if this is true.
I'm not sure. Zach's been on the show twice. I'm not sure, have I said that to him in the interview? Maybe not. Maybe we've just said it, slagged him off.
I used to look up to some clowns as well when I was younger.
Would you believe that is exactly what Zach would say? Dean Rock, right? So we're talking about runs and games in a row, and I was surprised to hear or to read this. Dean Rock is poised to make his 60th consecutive appearance for Dublin when they played Offaly or Wicklow in the Championship. So, like, I mean, he's played unbelievably. He's played 59 games in a row. This is for Dublin, and the competitiveness and the kind of cutthroat selective policies that Jim Gavin has. You know, we see Kevin McManaman doesn't play games in a row. So, like, I mean, 52 of these 59 games he started. And that's going back as far as 2014. So it's an incredible 52 games started in a row and 59 games in total. Now, you have to say that he's their free taker. So you don't draw, and Bernard Brogan was the free taker if he wasn't. And Bernard can be unreliable from the easy ones and get the difficult ones. So I suppose it's not comparing like with like maybe with some of the other forwards. When you're the free taker, you're vital. Now, I'm not saying he's not vital anyways. He is, but maybe the free taking is given that extra bit of context.
No, but that's a good point, because I used to see him just as a free taker, and because he was the best in Ireland, he gets a free pass with anything. But he has just developed into this real model of consistency. Like, you know, he's going to win ball for you. If he's not scoring from play, he's going to win ball and pop it off. But normally he will score from play as well. Like, look at that Ballymun game. I know it's club level, but it just showed how far ahead he's gone now. Like, you know, just with everything he's doing, they score 1-3 or 1-4 or something from play in that game.
Yeah,
you know, everything's just coming so easy for him now. He's just completely different level. And yeah, I remember it was a Donegal game this year. He didn't start. That was one of the games he didn't start. But as soon as things started going into the melting pot, he was the man that Jim Gavin called on and thought, we can't take any risks here. So that's how highly he's thought of.
It must be just such a nice feeling to be as accurate as him and know that when you just get a split second, that's going over the bar. Like, there's no messing around. It's just going over.
It is depressing for opposition as well. Any free, it's like, for fuck's sake, like, this boy again.
And that's on the freeze. Yeah, he was like, was it last year? It wasn't last year. It was the year before he had that sensational record.
Yeah, 90-something percent
in the 90th percentage. Yeah. But I'd love him to tell us what he really thinks of the freeze. Remember after the Ireland final when he was describing the free that won it? Well, that's my job. So I just, you know, stood up, took it. That's what I'm there to do. And that's it.
Yeah. What do you think the reality would have been like? Jesus! If I miss this, we're not going to win.
this is while Lee Keegan's pegging a GPS at him. Like, I mean, I'm just here to do that.
David O'Connor was mouthing at him as well, wasn't he? That's expected. It's process.
TV matches for the summer are not announced yet. So we're only 3 weeks away from the championship starting, and we don't know what games RTE are gone for and what games Sky have gone for. So the whole talk, I think this was from a piece that Paul Rouse did on The Examiner, is that Sky are going to get rid of their qualifier coverage in favour of Super 8s matches. So there's 8 more Super 8s matches than usual. They used to have 2 quarterfinals exclusive. So they're, like, obviously from a business point of view, Sky would be stupid not to want more of those high profile games. It's interesting to see how this is going to play out, because if these Super 8 games are sold out, right? So the excuse that just go and watch it. You know this excuse that a lot of people say for these pay-per-view channels? Just go to the game. Stop crying. But if the game's sold out, which it could be in regional venues, home matches like OMA, for example, or down in Tralee or wherever it is, if they're sold out and some of these Super 8s are behind the paywall, at least 2 of them will be, and Sky will look for more. And they're also on the semi-finals and the finals. They share that with RTE. But they could have an extra 2 or 3 of these Super 8s, or even 2. Could have 4 of the 12 Super 8s potentially behind a paywall and sold out. Nobody have to watch them. Like, there'd be war.
Yeah, and it was bad enough last year. I remember there was a stage where I think it was 11 games left and Sky had the majority of them. They were going to show 8, 6 of them exclusively on Sky. They were going to show 9, sorry, and 6 of them were on Sky. So the majority of the round 4 qualifiers, quarterfinal, semis and final, they were all on Sky Sports exclusive. That was bad enough. Now you have the Super 8s, which is what we were saying last week, is going to invigorate everything and it's going to be class crack. Suddenly they're not on TV.
But even it'll be, and this is why I think the GAA are so wrong not to have resold these matches. Because I know not that many people got to see them because they're on Sky, but you quite enjoyed the Mayo run through the qualifiers. Like, there was a whole story in that in itself, nearly getting caught. You know, the game down in Clare was a great occasion in Ennis, and the game in the Gaelic grounds against Cork, pretty sure that was on Sky as well. Yeah. All the Mayo games, the Derry one must have been on Sky too, because all their games. And they're just going to be given up now in favour. So you might miss a whole kind of, narrative of the summer, which was Mayo last year. Yeah. And I know that everybody didn't get to see it, but some people got to see them. And you might miss out on all that now because they're going and taking some of the bigger games potentially away.
But you also have better highlights when someone's there covering the whole game.
Yeah,
you
true.
Know, you see those league roundups when there's nobody covering the full game. Because RT get them from TG Cahir and stuff, so it's better highlights for the games that's being covered. But where, speaking of TG Cahir, where are they? Why didn't the GAA come and say, right, we've got 27 games left over that nobody's showing. Yeah. Do you want to show them? And we can charge you this amount. If RT want to buy them, great, but there's a pile of games there that people aren't showing, so why don't we try to get them all?
I think TG4 should have
Cahir.
TG Cahir, jeez, yeah. I'm almost at 50% now. I'm better than every single time, but I'm improving. I'm getting there, Conan. I think they should have play or show games all year round. End of story. They should have rights as the national language broadcaster to show every game that they want, and that's it. And stop all this kind of talk about it. Why are they thrown out of the? Why are they thrown when they show such commitment to show so many club games and league games? Why are they just turfed out in the cold when it comes to championship? That's hardly fair, is it? They're the ones committing to the low profile games. Why are they just banished then when it comes to championship? I don't know. I don't see why they are.
Comes back to Sky, I suppose they'd be saying, why the hell are we paying money when they're showing it for free anyway?
See, I wasn't going to bring it back on Sky there because I'm like a broken record. But it is going to be interesting. I definitely think GAA has missed a trick and Tom Ryan last week saying we're happy with the agreement, and I know we mentioned this last Thursday, you're happy with that agreement last year. Next year I'd almost guarantee this will change. I'd almost guarantee it. But they'll wait for the outrage, they'll wait for the critic. There's no kind of forward thinking in this. It's always the safe option, stick to what we know there now last year, and then they'll be given out this year. And next year they'll renegotiate with RT and Sky, and there'll be some more games. And you'd almost guarantee that's what's going to happen.
And you used to hate the outrage on Twitter, but it's actually worth something. If you cry enough on Twitter, then the GAA will take notice a year later.
In fair, do you know what I think works against GAA people in general? Is that the outrage, they give out about everything. It's fashionable to give out about the GAA and Croke Park. And I know, Jesus, sure, we do it ourselves. But because there's outrage about everything, I think Croke Park are almost they give out about, you know what I mean? You have to pick your fights. Stop complainer. For example, the Monaghan club thing last week. Like, there's people replying back to me on Twitter saying, this is a disgrace to the club players. Mate, it's not. They're giving them 18 games, nearly doubled every other county. Do you know what I mean? They're giving, actually making the extra 8 without counties competitive. And like, there's fellas coming back with this same old nonsense. It's not, it's Croke Park as usual. Stop. Wait until there's a proper fight and actually fight that fight, or else I think you're playing into Croke Park's hand, because I'd say they're going, not listening to that. It's the usual old clamour out of everybody when the minute we do, you know.
And if you were in Croke Park, you'd probably be thinking something similar when you have all this power and you're like, right, hang on, everybody's whinging about everything.
Yeah.
What will I actually look at?
So we're going to be, they're going to be whinging no matter what we do here. So let's just stick to what we did last year. That's probably the safest option.
Thank God we don't whinge in this podcast.
Goalkeeper evolution. This is definitely something we're not going to whinge about. So Monaghan, minor goalkeeper, not minor anymore, right? So it's under 17. Ryan Farrelly. So he scored from play, Conan. So this is probably a new thing. Well, it's a new thing for me anyway. So Graham Brody from Laois, he ventures towards the midfield area.
Yeah.
And we know this evolution of goalkeepers, in that always goalkeepers were seen as could potentially be a fat lad just with a good big boot of a ball up to midfield. They were like that for a long time. You'd be doing laps in training and the goalkeeper might be, you might lap the goalkeeper after two rounds. Like, they were always, goalkeepers coming up underage were always a player that just couldn't get a game outfield. So he ended up going, how am I going to get on this team? I'll go in goals. And they weren't proper footballers at all. But that's not the reality now. They're proper footballers. They're well able to stay in training with outfield players. They're brilliant kickers of the ball, off the hands and off the tee. Now, the evolution in the last year or two is that, well, okay, some people would say Shane Curran was doing it 15 years ago. But now we're seeing more goalkeepers actually, because teams are pushing up on kickouts, that they're going short, they're taking a risk going short, but they're going for the return. Then they're out through that line then, and because everyone's manning up, the only person to man up on them is the goalie at the other end. So like, they get a free run out towards midfield. So we've seen that, but I have yet to see a goalkeeper venture on further, and maybe that's the next step.
Yeah, well, like, we talked about Rory Began dinner from Monaghan a couple of weeks ago, and I think Keane Ward said something like, you know, of course it would be a complete waste of a player having him standing there on your line when you can use him to get out of the fence and whatever. And Began actually last year scored for Scotstown and went right up the pitch the whole way, nobody tackled him.
Did he?
There's a video of it, like, it's on the website actually today, because off the back of that Ryan Farrelly one.
Right.
And he just went up and everyone else looks so gullible, they're all standing in their zones, and Began just keeps going and just knocks it over and jogs back, like, you know. And this was always going to happen the way it had been going. And like, I have a theory that people, like, you don't even need to be a good tackler anymore in the GAA, because people are so obsessed with not losing the ball and not going into the tackle. So as long as you're in position, you're seen as a good defender. Like, you get in the position and everybody else won't take you on, they'll just pop it off somewhere else.
Yeah, once you get close and get a hand on, they'll ship it off.
So there's space for a keeper, they go up there as an extra man. And against Derry, as it was in that minor game, Derry, very defensive team, very defensive coach, your man would have had the whole pitch to run into.
Right.
You know, I know it was from a short free he scored as well, so again, maybe they're all in zones and he played it short and got it back and stuff. But
no, he played a short kick out and got it back.
Oh, is that what it was?
And then just continued on. Yeah, I think that was it. Yeah.
So Derry would have been retreating the whole way back, and he just could have
Well, I don't know about Derry retreating. You'd probably know more about that than me, that if they did. But he took a short kick out and during extra time, and then he popped up at the other end of the field to raise a white flag. That's all I read on it, so I'm not too sure. But it's definitely interesting, and it's definitely something with maybe not kicking scores, but seeing goalkeepers like Graham Brody out past your 45 and not being mad with it, but like distributing it carefully and getting back in, I think that's definitely something that we'll see more of, and definitely something that we'll talk about during the summer. Kerry Cork and Roscommon, what's so special about Kerry Cork and Roscommon this summer, Conan? This is football now. I know hurling's your specialty. So what's so special about them?
They don't have to play in that god-awful Ulster Championship where you start in the preliminary round and you have 4 games to get to the quarter-final. 5 maybe if you're unlucky.
Well, that is true about all 3 as well, but that's not exclusively true. So the 3 of them are guaranteed not to be in round 1 of the qualifiers. They're the only 3 teams in the country that will not... That will definitely, absolutely not be in round 1 of the qualifiers. And look, we're not going to talk about the unfairness and the inequalities and the provinces and how they're all messy. Like, that goes without saying now. And for everything about this restructure this year, it did nothing to alleviate the
problem.
Yeah, the inequalities that happens with the provincial systems feeding into the All Ireland series. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But this year it's different. So when the first 16 teams lose, so that's going to be the quarterfinals in Ulster, the preliminary in Ulster, the quarters in Leinster, whoever else is in it anyways, the 16 goes in and it's an open draw. So last year it was split into 16 and 16, wasn't it? The last few years. I think that was to guarantee teams had 2 week break after losing. Yeah. So I hated them. I couldn't ever follow what the hell was going on. So thankfully now we're back into 16 losers just go into a draw together. So unfortunately it could be, you could, the two teams that have played each other in the Leinster Championship, or no, no, it couldn't be that, obviously. But, like, I mean, it's 16 teams that lost, and it could. Well, yeah, the two preliminary teams. Okay, I'll explain this because I'm confusing myself. So, the preliminary round in Ulster is Donegal and Cavan. Say Donegal win that and lose their next game, Donegal and Cavan go back into it, so they could get drawn in round one of qualifying. That's what I'm trying to say.
They're playing Derry the next game, I wouldn't worry about that.
It's not going to happen.
But that's happened before, yeah, because they have been so strict with making sure teams have the 2 week break. I remember Down beat Derry and then they had to play them in the qualifiers like 2 weeks later or something and got beat back up in Derry as well, which is completely unfair. But it has happened already, and it will happen again. But it's absolute nonsense that there's three teams just immune to this for no real reason.
No real reason. And the four quarterfinals, alright, so the sequencing of this year's championship means that if you want to reach the Super 8s and you're coming from the second round qualifiers, I think there might be a break between round one qualifiers, round two, so you play three games in that qualifiers in as many weeks, and then you get into the Super 8s and you have to play on July the 14th, 15th, July 21, 22, so it's a total of five weekends in succession. So it's not as much as what I initially had thought. I thought you would have had to go four round one, two, three, four of the qualifiers and then potentially three Super 8s in a row. I thought it was going to be seven, but it's going to be five in a row, so it's still definitely going to stretch your squad.
Yeah, listen, I just get really worked up about this whole thing that we're not going to get into it, but the fact that one team can play four games to get to the quarters and another team can play two to get to the quarters, it's rubbish. So, like, you know, again, you're talking about being stretched your squad. If you play four games in the Leinster Championship, lose at some stage, then you go into the qualifiers, so you end up playing five games to get to the Super 8s.
Yeah.
Where some teams will have played two, three tops.
Yeah, sure. We know Roscommon, Kerry or Cork, if they win their semi-final, which they'd all be favourites to do, maybe not Cork, then they have two chances of getting
they're
the
in
final,
round four at least.
They have the final and then they have the round four qualifiers. So they just have to win one game and suddenly they have two opportunities to get into Super 8s. It's just like it's fairy tale stuff. I'd say Kevin Maxtay cannot believe his luck, because Connacht is so difficult with Galway and Mayo being so strong, to be picked on the other side of that in a semi and then only have to win that semi and then know that you could lose the Connacht final and draw someone who's come through three weekends in a row.
Yeah. And like this isn't a slight on Connacht, because they have three teams in Division 1, so they're obviously a big province now that's going well. And like likewise Kerry, I know Thomas Fichet has always complained about Kerry's easy route, they wanted something a bit tougher.
Yeah.
So it doesn't help. It's just the numbers, like, just you can't have one team playing four, the other team playing two to get to the same level. Just sort that out.
Do you know what, I'm just talking about it now, it sounds like such an old it sounds like such an old debate that I'm actually bored talking about it, because everybody knows about it. And I remember 2 years, 3 years ago me getting really hyped up about this kind of stuff, and my mom was like, Jesus, what's the point? You know, like, I mean, it doesn't seem to have worked, or it doesn't seem to have changed anything. So, I don't know, we'll leave off that. We know that it's unfair, and it just seems to be accepted that that's unfair, and that's the way it's going to be. I want to finish up with a story which I'm calling Sundays with Sean O'Gahalpine. So, he was at some thing last week, and I really enjoyed the article. It was on the different newspapers, because, you know, they were all at this event that he was at. And he was painting a picture of, you know, when fellas retire and they're like, oh, geez, I really miss it. You know, the big days, the smell of fresh cut grass and the big crowds and all. And Sean Oak's a bit like, ah, no, I don't miss that at all. He says, for 15 years, Sundays for me meant either a living room or meant either living in a hotel room, getting lambasted by a manager in a dressing room, or spending an afternoon chasing Henry Shefflin, Eddie Brennan or Owen Kelly. Nobody wants to chase any of those three. He says, then going back on the bus for a 3-hour journey, and if you lost it felt like 10 hours. Then you go home, you barely get to say hello to your partner, who's probably already in bed, and then the alarm rings the following morning for you to go into work. That was my Sunday for 15 years, so you can imagine my Sundays now. It's fucking heaven. Right, so there's a part of me saying, look, I had a good 15 years doing that and I just want to do something different, more relaxing. So this is his Sunday now, right? So this is how he spends his Sunday now. Sunday now for me is to wake up and read the papers. Lovely. Enjoy a nice fry every now and then, because you know Sean Ogg's body is a temple, so only now and then for the fry. Then he'll hit a bit of tennis with the wife. Then he'll come back, then he'll watch a match on the telly, and if it's a nice day, he'll put the barbecue on. Sundays now are glorious, he said.
Sundays with Sean O'Gahalpin.
Yeah, the only thing missing was a nice frosty beer, but he doesn't drink, and it's just a fry every now and then. So, like, I mean, you want to throw in a beer with that barbecue, Sean Ogan, we'll really be jealous of your Sundays. But that's, I think it's very interesting, like, for me to read that and go, geez, I really enjoyed it when I was doing it, but God almighty, that was hard. You know, and that's kind of the picture that he's painting. Like, I mean, being away every weekend on buses and in hotels, and it's a sunny day, and like getting home and your partner being in bed already, so you wouldn't probably talked since yeah. the Saturday night, and then you're gone all day for work on Monday, so it's Monday evening by the time you're coming back and actually having a conversation yeah. in person. So like, I mean, it is hard, there's no doubt about that. You're giving out because you're a club player and you'd love to do all that.
Well, it's a tough one because I'm back and forth. You know, I get romantic about the GAA, and you know, on one hand I would look there at Sean Ogan, he's a warrior, like he's going to want to have another warrior fight at some stage, you know, the competitiveness surely will bring it out in him again. And
maybe tennis with the missus gets very competitive and that's
yeah. maybe he's losing the hurry, so that's keeping him going. But yeah, like I remember, like I used to get really nervous before games because I wasn't that good, you know, so I'd be really tense and stuff the day before and the day of a game, and didn't like the mornings. Like, you know, I remember my nephew used to come around on Sunday morning, but I hated it because it was like, listen, I need to drink water and focus. Like, you know, it was just so pent up. And then you'd go and play the game stiff as a board in the changing room, really warm, like nervous during the warm up, and then you play, you probably lose, and you come home and you wouldn't want to talk to anybody about it then, and your whole life, which has been going towards this game, suddenly now you don't want to talk about it, like, and it's a really bad way of being. And I remember one time making a joke in the changing rooms after we lost, just sort of turned to one of the boys beside me because nobody was talking, and we're joking about some time we were really good for 15 minutes against another team, and the manager dragged everybody in from the showers and stuff and started pointing at me and saying, boys, you're not hurting enough in here. So you weren't hurt enough, like you weren't sort of beating yourself up enough. So from that point of view, I used to be like, Jesus, I could do without this, I'd love to get away from it all.
Yeah.
But then when you do get away from it all, when you go off for the winter, when you take a year out or whatever, I find that you just start missing it again, and you start thinking, Jesus, that's what it was all about. We were really building something there.
Yeah, but what you're not doing is you're not spending your Sundays properly without it. That's yeah, so maybe. I'm just going to read again for you what to do with your Sunday, and then you don't have to worry about it. So wake up, read the papers, I'm sure you probably do that, enjoy a nice fry every now and then, hit some tennis with the missus, his wife, come back again, watch a match on telly. If it's a nice day, put the barbecue on, have a barbecue. Sundays now are glorious. Right.
You're right.
Up next, we'll talk to Daniel Flynn.
You ready? Let's go. I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, yeah. and it does happen, yeah. But I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show, it doesn't look great. Yeah, there was maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out dirty, but unlucky to lose. Like, let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure,
50% pain, 100% reason to remember the name. All right, delighted to say Daniel Flynn joins us on the line now. Daniel, thanks for dragging yourself away from your studies to talk to us.
No bother. Any excuse.
Any excuse. Come here, it must be nice to have the April free of intercounty football when you're coming up to exams like this, because like intercounty football can be a little bit of a distraction from stuff that you want to do in your real life.
It is. It's what you call it. It's grand. I'm lucky, you know, my exams aren't until the middle of May, so I'm stuck straight back into it. But it's good to be free, like, to be able to play with the club at the weekend, especially. So yeah, I'm enjoying that aspect of it.
So what are you doing? What are you doing in Kildare for April? You're playing league and championship.
We're playing league and championship. Yeah. So I think we've club championship starting in 2 weeks' time, and we've played the last three or four league games. So since the beginning of April, we've been training away with the county and playing the club games at the weekend. So it's been a good balance there. So
yeah, not a bad balance, because you're actually lucky enough, it's not till the 26th of May that you're out in the championship. You come straight in at the quarter final stage, so like you still have a lot of May to be exclusively with the county anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I think the Leinster Championship, is it 2 weeks before? I think the Leinster Championship starts, so we still have a good bit of time together before we play our first game. Like, so
yeah, so
it's good. They're too panicked. They're happy enough to let us back to the club, so it's working out well.
Yeah, it's working out well. And is getting a break from Kildare something that you all need at this stage? Because, like, I mean, I'd imagine confidence must be pretty low, or is it low? Or I know, like, managers try to put a positive spin on it, and the positive spin is that you were so close to Tyrone and Monaghan could have gone either way. You were very unlucky against Donegal. The negative spin is that you lost all seven games.
Yeah, and look, that's it. Like, not winning a game is tough. And going back to the club and being able to play there and to start winning a few games is great. I don't know, confidence is grand within the whole setup. Really, like, we never really took a big hit, if you get me. Like, maybe when the last game or after the Mayo match, we kind of said, all right, look, we're kind of chasing our tail here. But training's going well, and kind of the mood in the camp is grand. Like, you wouldn't expect it for a team that are having won a game that's in the league, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, because it's not just the league. Like, you obviously had that very good performance against Laois, and then a really good performance against Meath, and you haven't won since that Meath game. Like, it's a terrible stat. Now, you can put it all into context about, since the Meath game, you only lost two games last year in that run. You know what I mean? The run sounds really bad when you go,
year. Don't worry. I've heard boys saying to me and work and stuff, but I don't know, like, that's last year, and then we lost our two O'Byrne Cups games this year. I wouldn't be too worried about that, but
yeah,
not winning the league this year, it's a bit disappointing. But like that, it's Division 1, the margins are so tight, like you were saying. The Tyrone game, the Monaghan game, the Donegal game, just a bit of rub of the green, I think, and you could easily come out with two wins, three wins, and it could have changed the whole league around. But look, it didn't. Look, it is what it is now, and we'll move on to the summer. So
yeah,
because I'm happy it's behind us though.
Yeah, it's happy because, like, I mean, you must look at Galway and get really frustrated that they really pushed on. You and them were on a very similar level last year, and the league final was very close, and then, you know, they were able to push on to the level they got to, and, you know, it doesn't look like you've made that step up.
They're flying, aren't they?
Yeah.
They really took to it like a duck to water. But I don't know how to even compare it. Like, they've really stepped on, like you said. But I don't know. Yeah, got off to a bad start, and then things went from bad to worse. And before you know it, you're at the end of the league, and you haven't won again.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it happened Roscommon last year, didn't it? They won the last game against Cavan, and
they won the last one. Yeah.
They turned it around. So, like, I mean, suppose the April of getting away from games, it's almost like that season's over, and you're starting a new season again.
Yeah, and like, even when we were in there, things were grand. We weren't really listening too much to the outside. The mood within the camp was still grand and still good. Boys weren't moping around the place, were sulking, or say there was no negative energy there, which was great. Like, to come into on a Tuesday and a Thursday, like, you'd expect to be sulking or moping around the place or feeling sorry for yourself. But we weren't, which was great. But then to step away for April, I find it was good. I like getting back to the club and doing your own thing, give more time to yourself and stuff. So it's a nice break.
Yeah. Are you enjoying full forward? It looks like that's a permanent fixture for you now.
I'm enjoying full forward. I am, yeah. It's great when there's no one standing in front of you.
But,
yeah. That's the truth.
But that doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't. But
Yeah, no, it's good. I'm liking it. I was midfield there for a few years and he threw me in there, I think it was last year, year before, so seems to be working out well so far.
Yeah, because this is the thing, because I've always, you were always, when you came on my radar, you were number 10 wing forward or your midfield, and I think McGeaney played you wing back for a little while, and you know, full forward is a completely different skill set and a completely different, I don't know, you know, position to learn. I've done it myself from being in that middle third into full forward, and it takes a bit of getting used to.
Yeah, I think it was before I went away, I was kind of always out to feel a bit more, I was a bit lighter and stuff. I kind of was able to run a bit more maybe, and then when I come home from Australia, I was that bit bigger, I think maybe, and maybe that suited it a bit more. But when I was younger as well, I couldn't shoot to save myself. I had a Hogan Cup final or something like that, and I kicked something like 5 or 6 wides in the match. So I had to work on that to get in there full forward. I would think it's working out well so far, aren't you?
No, it is working well. But like, you've had it, you're coming off an absolutely brilliant league, and I guess this is something that you just have to get used to. Because, like, I mean, are you a natural finisher? Like, you mentioned you kick a lot of wides, but that's when you were younger. But like, is it? Have you always been able to, you know, run up high tallies? Because I know full forward is a lot of kicking on the turn, whereas out the field is more kicking on the run, which I always found a lot easier.
No, not at all. I wouldn't be a natural finisher at all. For a long time my game was more running and maybe linking the player, winning frees and stuff, but I really had to work on it, and it's just sort of something that's happened over time. There's no great science to it or that, but just practicing really, and going to training and throwing caution to the wind a small bit, and whatever happens happens, and like that, it's sort of working out well, and there's a bit of confidence there as well when you do put up maybe a big score or two, and you think maybe this is the place for me, so I'm happy enough so far in there.
Yeah, because the six points from play against Kerry, a lot of them were kind of proper full forward scores. You know, you're looping around and, you know, left or right, they were actual full forward scores, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I get you. It was great. I was delighted after that game, to be honest, because the week before I was thinking like a balloon, maybe 3 or 4 balls up into the air. I was just happy to get that consistency right, especially now going back as well into the club and coming into the championship. It's nice to have that there.
Yeah, I was reading that you were very hard on yourself after missing that goal in the Leinster final. You didn't even go out after it, and then I was thinking, like, I mean, if you're not used to being in that position at full forward, you know, where you just have that split second to beat Stephen Cluxton, that will come, you know what I mean? I wouldn't be that hard on you for him saving that one.
Oh, stop, will you? So we had a club auction there yesterday down at the pub, and whoever was making up the slideshow, they were auctioning off 2 Leinster final tickets, and lo and behold, here's this big massive thing up on the screen of me missing the one on Moma Cluxton. I stormed out of the pub and back into the shop.
And come here, did you not go out that night? Is that true?
I didn't go out that night. I couldn't sleep, sure. It all happened so quick.
That's the thing.
I think I ran behind Brian Fenton, I think, and there was just an acre of space, and I couldn't believe what happened, and sure, bottled it, and sure, what do you call it, kicked it at him, sure, what can you do?
Yeah.
Like you were saying, it's not as if I've been playing there for the last 10 years. It's something that's new and something that I'm still kind of learning how to play there, so what can you do? Put it down to experience and
exactly.
Move on.
That's the thing, because like, I really believe this, like the likes of the Gooches and the Bernard Brogans that will know what to do in that situation, they've been doing it since under 12. They've made those mistakes at under 12, under 14, and now they'd probably take a bounce and go around him. You know, that's all experience of how to know how to deal with that split second kind of opportunity.
It is, like, there's a knack to it. Like, we've Neil Flynn in with us in Kildare, and he's lethal, so he is in them situations. He just, there's this time stand still for him, he can do what he wants.
Yeah.
But there is, like, some boys are a lot better at than others.
Yeah, you're a late developer as well. You didn't really start taking Gaelic football seriously until 16 or 17.
Around that, yeah. How do you call it? I think I've ended up playing a year minor. I was kind of just started playing beforehand. So I was never really what a pleasure when I was maybe 11 or 12, and socially more than anything else. And then by the time I kind of got to maybe 16 or 17, I think I had a good game or two maybe with the club or something like that, and started to just get a bit of self-belief and a bit of confidence, and found something that I was kind of good at and could express myself in, and really started enjoying it then. And
and buying into the whole thing.
Right, so it's not like you were earmarked from 12, 13, 14 as a future, you know, star for Kildare. This just kind of crept up on you.
No, God, no. And I wouldn't come from a big footballer family either, so it was never something that was in the sort of ingrained in us or I bet into us. It was, you can do what you want or play it if you want. And sort of fell into it and just found something that was kind of good at. And you know yourself, if you're good at something, you feel good doing it, and away it went, and it's been going well so far. And
But would you have followed it? Like, would you be following the Intercounty, or would you be completely sheltered from it? You just go up and play with your club and not really watch a match on TV.
Yeah, I never used to watch it. I still don't, really. I still have much of a clue what's going on. I don't really follow it. I just enjoy playing it with the boys. The school had a big, huge bearing on it, St. Mary's Eden Derry. And I suppose that was sort of the springboard or the platform for jumping on to play with the county. We had a bit of success there at the time, and it sort of led into with a lot of boys around the same age that were playing sort of minor and moving on to under 21 then afterwards. So I think that had a huge bearing on it for me, going to school in Eden Derry, sort of.
Right. Okay, so you got your education in Offaly.
I got my education in Offaly, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you actually remind me with that. I went to college in Tralee with a fella called Eamon Redden, and he played senior with Donegal, and this was 1999. And in 1999, he didn't know who Paul Curran was. He just had no interest in the actual game, like nationally. He just liked playing it.
Only I'm the same now. I don't really follow it at all, to be honest. I'll have a look or a glance at it, but I wouldn't. I just enjoy it, to be honest. Like, it's fun for me, and I don't take it too seriously. It backfires sometimes. Like, I'm a bit too relaxed and stuff. But
right.
I just enjoy it.
Yeah, tell me you knew Keane O'Sullivan was running down to Marquee in the Leinster final last year.
I did. oh no, I did. Don't worry. And I found out about it fairly quick as well.
come here. So I don't want to get into the Australian thing with you. I know, like, I mean, Zach Tuohy, he made headlines yesterday playing 150 games. You were out there for 2 years and then came home. And I thought it was interesting. Like, I mean, you were 20 years old. You'd never left Ireland before 2013. Your mother and father are crying in the airport when you're leaving. That must be a huge kind of thing where you're excited to go, but like, I'd say your half of you is like terrified.
Not even terrified. I didn't even know what I was getting myself into. Like, I was just that bit green, and like, from when they all come knocking, it's a great thing, and to go away is seen as sort of the natural progression. I didn't really think there was a choice involved, and I wanted to do it. Paul Cribben had gone from Johnstown Bridge as well, and it was seen as a massive success. So, kind of all of us around that age, maybe a year or two behind him, it was sort of the ultimate thing to get. And then when I got over there, I don't know, I missed home, and it was nice being in Australia. I was happy enough to come home without at the same time.
Yeah.
It's a different sort of culture over there. It's a different, just a huge thing to just lift yourself up from here and go out there. I found it tough now, to be honest.
Yeah, that's the thing, because I suppose it's grand when you're training. It's when you come home from training and, you know, you don't have a circle of friends necessarily, so you probably spend a lot of time on your own. A lot of fellas are in the same boat. Like, I mean, very few stay out past the 2 years.
Yeah, I think I packed it in before the 2 years. It was maybe a year and one pre-season. After that, I just came home at Christmas time and had enough. But there's a good few boys doing well, I think. I think Mark O'Connor was playing with Dillon. I think he's playing with Zach, and there's a...
Yeah.
Conor Glass is doing well at Hawthorne, so there's a few boys going well. McKenna had the headlines there, I think, last week, the week before. He seems to be flying for Essendon. But you'd wish them all the best, like.
Yeah.
I'm happy I did it. Like, so it was a huge learning curve to say move away and live on your own there for a year and come back. I found it made me grow up a lot.
Yeah, as a person. But you like, I mean, when you came back, I was reading that you were saying that you were really lost in that you didn't know what to do. You worked as an electrician for a while, then you worked in a local shop, and you know, you were kind of twiddling your thumbs in that you hadn't probably thought this through.
Completely lost. And I think that came from putting so much focus on football from that young age of 17, 18, that when I was in school, I was just playing football and I hadn't really much care for
getting an education or progression or going to college or anything like that. And it was when I came back, it hit me that money doesn't grow on trees. Basically, you don't just get money into your account every month for playing football. The GPA were a big help for me then, actually. They have a program. It's a player development program, and I went and met with a life coach or something like this, and he asked me what I wanted to do and fill out a form, and I ended up realising that I kind of wanted to go across school and get a good education, and I'm in college now, nearly finished. So I don't know how to put my finger on it.
That's great. So what are you doing in Maynooth now?
I'm doing accounting and finance in Maynooth now.
Okay.
So there's Paddy Rolfe's there as well. He's doing the same course, the two of us are in our final year with one of the other lads in the Collector team. So it's going well. I'll probably do a master's now next year. And then finish and then go and have to do a bit of work.
You then get into the real world. But that's interesting, because I criticise the GPA a lot on the show here. But it's nice to hear something positive like that you were kind of lost in your personal life, and they gave you that direction and helped you out.
Yeah, that's what it was, really. I think they run a couple of services like that, and it's just been good. I just found at that age I wasn't sure what I wanted to do.
No,
and it was somewhat different. Yourself, if you're talking to your mother, you're talking to your father, you take what they say with a pinch of salt, and kind of sort of when it's someone, it's a stranger, and you sort of feel like a grown-up chatting to these people, it's a bit different. I just found it good.
Another thing I was reading about you, and this goes against everything everybody says about Australia and going out there to play, and I say it on the show here without really overthinking it too much, is that they'll go out there for 2 years and they'll come back better players for it. And I was reading you were saying that's not necessarily true, that you come back and you almost have to retrain yourself at Gaelic football all over again.
Yeah, I found that. So you're playing a different game for 2 years, like, so for you, whatever long you're out there, and you're doing it so often, you're training maybe 3 or 4 times a week, and you're looking at football on the telly, and you're looking at vision. So over time, your movement starts to get different. The way you're kicking the ball is completely different. The runs are different. It's just, and then when you come back, you're landed, and it's a different level of fitness as well. It's more stop start out there, and you're able to run off, and I find it great. You sprint up the field, and you're able to sprint off and take a rest.
Right.
Whereas here, it's just all go for 60 or 70 minutes, and the flight of the ball is different. Just a couple of things. It takes maybe a year to really settle back in and get used to it all again, I found.
Right, because last year against Laois was your first championship game for 4 years, and then I was trying to look back through it, and you were only in Australia for 2 years, not even 2 years. So I was like, where did those other 2 years go to? Where did Daniel Flynn disappear to? But you went through 2 years of disastrous injuries, so you couldn't get back into the Gaelic football properly at all.
Yeah, a bit lost as well on top of that, and getting injured, and that didn't help. I think I stepped away for someone as well. I think when Jason Ryan was there, I was all over the place. I was fed up getting injured, and I was a bit sick of it. I think last year was the first kind of full run I had. I thought it's been great, thank God. 2024 and able to play the championship is not too bad.
Yeah, 24. So you're 24. You'd 4 years away from the game. You'd played before you left. People probably think you're 28 at this stage, that you've been around for so long.
Yeah, it's all over the place. Like.
Yeah, it's definitely been an interesting career so far.
Interesting is the word for it. Headstrong man.
But you must have had to be mentally very strong though when you came back, because you're dealing with the disappointment probably of what could have been out there. Then you're not sure what you're doing with your life. Then at least if you're playing well on the pitch, it would be that boost to, you know what I mean, of confidence and stuff. But that wasn't going well for you because of injury. So, it must have been a really difficult couple of years for you.
It was. I had to find my feet again. It wasn't that hard. Look, sorry, I'm happy I came home and I'm happy I tried it. But it was. I had that doubt in the back of my head there for a long time of what if. Or maybe should I just stuck it out and stuff like that, but whatever's meant to happen is going to happen. I'm thinking about it overnight, it's not going to do me any good.
No.
So I'm kind of grand now. I'm on a good path now. So I'm nearly finished college, and I'm happy out, just kind of doing what I'm doing and being at home. That social network for me is
is a huge bearer of the happiness now with me. I found when I didn't have that over in Australia, I was miserable. And if you're not happy with what you're doing, there's no point really doing it, I find.
Yeah. What advice would you have for players going out to Australia? Because you go out at such a young age, you're only 18, a lot of the lads, and like, I mean, nobody knows what they want to do with their life really when they're 18, 19, unless you have an unbelievable careers development teacher or something in school. So you go out there for 2 years and it doesn't work out for a lot of players. Like, I mean, the stats kind of prove that, and then you're kind of back at 20, you know, with no real plan. You know, is there some sort of system should be put in place for players to have more kind of, I don't know, like, I mean, a longer term view of what might happen if it doesn't work out in 2 years' time?
Yeah, I don't know about a system or that, but I know if someone tried to tell me any different at 18, like, there'd be no talking to me. Like,
yeah,
when you're young and you're that age, you know everything, I think. But I'd say go. Like, if you're, what do you call it, you're over there for a year or two, you come back at 20, you're still a young man at 20, you can go and do what you want and go to college then, or jump into your apprenticeship or whatever you want to do. And I think it can only benefit you as a person more so than a player, like, to get away for a year and see a different part of the world and go and stand on your own 2 feet for a while. I find that the most helpful, and if it works out, great, but you can always come home.
Yeah, no, exactly. Come here, just to finish up, I want to ask you about that point you scored against Dublin, because we scored...
It
was an absolute cracker. Now, I have to say, I was on the podcast, I defended you. Now, I did send a DM to Niall Kelly just to be 100% sure, and he didn't reply to me, but you were in championship season and it was the morning after Leinster final, so I didn't think he would reply. But I was 100% saying you meant it. Now, the only thing that made me doubt it is there was someone on the edge of the square that would have been perfect for an outside of the right diagonal pass. But you can talk us through that point, just to clarify the whole thing.
I can't really remember too much of it now, but I know Cotton McNally was on the edge of the square instead of Niall Kelly. But he's too small. Like, his hit even passed into him. I only seen it afterwards, so... he's a very small man, but no, 100% meant it, Willie. I think you owe me a mug as well. I was up in Dublin for the summer last summer. I think I was listening to the podcast going up and down on the bus, so I think you owe me, is it a mug or something like that?
Yeah, it's a mug. Yeah, no one's actually got a mug in 2 years, so I owe a lot of people I owe a lot of people mugs. I still haven't gotten around to making the mugs, and it's going to be an awful job going back through each winner every week in hurling and football and giving them mugs. But
Conair Harrison's giving out a bunch as well. He said you owe him one as well.
Is Conair in Maynooth?
No, he's up and down. I only met him when we were up in Dublin at the International Rules Trails.
Okay.
And him and Caelan Mooney, so.
Lord, and Caelan Mooney got one as well, did he?
I don't know. Sort him out.
I'll have to sort this out. Come here, listen, I've taken up too much of your time here. I'll let you back to the books.
No bother at all. Thanks a million, Willie.
Yeah, great stuff from Daniel Flynn there, Conan. And this had to happen sometime. I had to get called out in this mugs debacle. And God, little did I know that Conair Harrison and Daniel Flynn are going to have a given out session about not getting their mugs at international rules trials.
The chickens have come home to roost, really. I feel very uneasy that, yeah, there's international rules players at international rules camp bitching about the GAA or not getting mugs. Come on, sort it out.
I mean, part of it is my laziness, but I'm very, very proud of the fact that they're both giving out about not having got them as well. So it's a weird feeling. One thing before we let you go is that Daniel Flynn, and I always find it incredible, and I think it's refreshing when an inter-county player just loves playing but doesn't necessarily really care about the game all that much. Yeah. It's bizarre. And I mentioned to Daniel there in the interview about Eamon Redden, who I played with down in Tralee, and in 1999 Eamon Redden didn't know who Paul Flynn was. Like, I nearly fell off the seat when he told me this, because like Paul Curran would have been one of my heroes with Graham Geraghty, like the attacking wing backs, and this fella played inter-county football, played minor football All-Ireland semi-final against me, and didn't know who Paul Curran was. It's weird, but it's funny, and I don't know, maybe there's an advantage to it that you're not engrossed in the game and overthinking things. Maybe
you think because you're a student of the game you've got an advantage on them. But yeah, like some of these boys like Daniel Flynn, you get it the way he plays. You just like going out on a Sunday and barging into people and running past them and kicking the ball.
Yeah,
That's what they do best.
He does. He plays off the cuff. We're huge fans of Daniel Flynn on the show, and he meant that point, which I said at the time he meant it. I think this is just kind of maybe left with a bit, you with a bit of egg on your face. I'm pretty sure at the time you thought that this was a pass.
Yeah, when he said he was listening to the podcast, I thought, ah, shit. I hope he didn't hear me say I thought it was a pass, which I still think it might have been. But
yeah, no, he said it was McNally, Chair McNally on the edge of the square. He says he can't get high balls, so no point in giving it across to him, so I'm going to stick it over the bar. Yeah, so that's it. Listen, that's always time for and we'll be back on Thursday with another show. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.